We get blessed by so many, you know, great speakers and doctors and technicians and every once in a while a scientist. In some cases, I would say a whistleblower. In this case, a WHO whistleblower. Someone that was actually working with the WHO. We spoke to her over a year ago. She was making the rounds, and this is what that looked like at that time.
The pandemic is organized internationally in a systemic way. WHO, what I see now is that they don't communicate. They are dictating a will of not communicating. It is clear that Tedros and his team are lying. They're not doing science. And who can we call to stop him? It's very shocking is that all the medias in the world say the same thing, the same words in the newspapers, and they are paying the media for producing what they want.
Where does this money come from other than our taxes? So we are actually financing the vaccine campaign and the death of people. You see how unethical this is?
The task force and the scientists that are built to lead this pseudo-pandemic are actually helping the rhetoric of the press, the way the press wants, the way the government wants, and we don't have a debate. We have censorship. Censorship is the first, you know, sign of a dictatorship. They censor doctors, they censor treatments that work. They go to pharmacies and they take the whole stock of ivermectin that works really well. They go and stop scientific people from doing good data collection, saying it is not valid. And they put their own data that's completely in conflict of interest. So WHO, with the media, the main media, they have very well analyzed the system. And they're head of the International Telecommunication Agency. So you can put all this together, and they have the whole system in their hands.
We have to see that science is in a very difficult place. It is corrupt, conflict of interest, the definitions have changed, people speaking and having the microphone are those who they want them to speak. So the news you get has absolutely no debate.
They are trying to lock down the liberties of people. The freedom of people is really disturbing them. They want to annihilate any thinking and emotion and cognition. So I'm just, you know, calling people to wake up and take back your health. Don't believe in the government. You're creating a perpetual pandemic.
All right, she's the former member of the Research and Ethics Review Committee at the WHO, and it is my honor and pleasure to be joined by Astrid Stuckelberger right now.
Thank you.
Here in Texas, I mean, we've been doing this by Zoom internationally, so it's so great to have you here. For my audience that, I mean, we have a, you know, our audience is so much bigger than when I last spoke with you because of everything we've been through. A lot of people waking up to the world may not be moving the way that I thought it was. So to be clear, when you were working at the WHO in this sort of ethics review committee, what was it you were doing there?
Well, the ethics research committee was not under contract. It's a volunteer, but it is to be an independent expert to review the researchers that WHO receives international and to validate that they are compliant with all the ethical framework. And this about, you know, 10 to 20 pages you have to fill in. So I was part of the committee with other people from WHO.
Okay. Now, specific to the world that we're in now, pandemic, and what was your work and, you know, with WHO and your understanding there that's sort of specific to what took place?
Yeah, following this ethics research committee, I got known, and also the University of Geneva Faculty of Medicine, where I was doing heading research and training in the Master of Public Health, where they asked me, because of this experience and many other experiences with WHO, to take the leadership for implementing a course with WHO on emergency management, pandemic management, and the implementation of international health regulation.
So the idea of emergencies and management being widespread, continental, maybe even worldwide emergency management, and you were a part of sort of structuring how we would educate on that. And did you think while you were doing that that there was anything nerve-wracking about the WHO considering this, or did you feel like this is really important, good work at the time?
At the time, when you read this IHR International Health Regulation 2005, it's fantastic. You have a feeling that there is a soft governance of the world to protect citizens. Not only an infection, but a chemical, radionuclear, crossing your border and coming to your home. So it looked very good. Or, you know, from farm to table, that an infection from peanut butter, you know, you remember the king, mm-hmm. king butter, salmonella, that we would take care of it at the border. Containment, where it starts, at the border. So it looked very nice. And training, country, member states, epidemiologists from or WHO member states for 3 years to put up a course to teach them the public health dimension. And the most important, that they make exercise so they can adapt it to their country. Mm-hmm. Keep full sovereignty. That looked perfect in the making.
And so when we think about IHR, this is something that essentially that the whole world has signed on to, right? Like they've agreed that in an emergency, you guys are in charge and you just sort of basically will do what you say.
194 member states signed, the IHR has been adopted through the WHO constitution with hands up. It has not even been signed, but they all were agreed.
So all basically, I'm in, and that's all it took.
Yeah. And that is the trick that is going on also now. But to say that it is a binding law, that they agree that all those articles, it's like a booklet of law. All those articles, there is a compliance that everybody accepts to treat travelers with ethics, to leave them a consent, to not put any restriction on travel and trade. That was one of the aim. It was to protect business, commercial, airlines, mm-hmm. People. The right of the traveler. I was in charge of the human rights on that.
Yeah.
And it's not happening now, but it is a beautiful booklet for that if people want to see. And what is interesting is that a lawyer can use that booklet to, you know, attack the government. Because basically I was an expert for a lawsuit and I said, okay, international health regulation says this. Your country is doing the opposite. So this is totally unjustified to put people in lockdown, airplane, keep them on the floor.
Yeah.
And because the international health regulation is precisely to protect the citizen and to protect trade and travel.
So where has it gone wrong? Because that's not the impression that I get now, right? It really seems, so you thought this was, you know, the work you were doing was so that we could all sort of have a global kumbaya moment, like we're all going to get along, we'll share information, there's an outbreak, there's an issue, this way we can all come together and work better together, all so that we'd be free to move about and, you know, because we're protected, we're safe to have our lives. When did you start realizing that this thing was sort of being turned on its head or was different than what you had signed up for?
Well, I already saw there was a problem because I was teaching that in a summer school on global health and human rights. A guy named Bruce Plotkin came up to me. He was one of the legal advisors of WHO in the course we set up for 3 years. And he invited me to lunch at WHO and told me, you cannot teach this. You have to stop teaching this at the university. And I said, no, why? Everybody should train. Everybody should be trained to know how to manage an emergency, to see the diagnosis, why it is this, why it is not. So I saw there, that's something strange. They stopped all the training. We were supposed to keep on training and train the trainer. Mm-hmm. And it was very successful. And suddenly Japan did not fund you. We had the contract. It did not work. That was the first part. But then on the ground, I happened to have been in an international conference in South Korea, end of January, invited with some former presidents and some, you know, Nobel Prizes, and they were all talking of the new world and how the world is going to be great. And suddenly they were talking of this virus in China, and at the conference gate, they started to have thermic scanners. And I said, this is strange. Okay, it's Korea, it's normal. If it comes over the border, it's international health regulation. It's normal to take security measures. Mm-hmm. But when I left and I traveled back through Frankfurt, and I remember stepping out of the airplane and hearing the same voice saying, there is the pandemic, there is a virus. The same fear monger. And there I said, there's something wrong. But what is wrong? You know, we cannot see a virus, it's invisible. Mm-hmm. So we need to take time. That's what we have been teaching. Agent characterization, analysis, little by little, like a crimi scene, you know?
Yeah.
So I saw there's something wrong. And then when I arrived, everybody was fearful. And then they started this test. And we never taught to do a diagnosis with a technology that has not been validated by the doctors and is unknown.
Right.
So this.
So you talk about like PCR testing and things like that, like tests that are not accurate. Guy, you know, Mullis, who created it, said, don't ever use this as a diagnostic tool. It's not really, it's you know, not designed for that.
With PCR, if you do it well, you can find almost anything in anybody. It starts making you believe in the sort of Buddhist notion that everything is contained in everything else, right? I mean, because if you can amplify one single molecule up to something that you can really measure, which PCR can do, then there's just very few molecules that you don't have at least one single one of them in your body.
This technology is for research. We know that. Carrie Mullis said it,
yeah.
Nobel Prize for PCR. CDC, I always mention, document of 13th of July on PCR. It's the chapter limitation and the chapter quality control were not respected at all. Usually you have to redo it and make sure it is this. And this limitation, it says clearly, the CDC said clearly, you cannot diagnose anything. This is not done for that. And you can definitely not manage an epidemic before a pandemic. And then the third is that WHO produced during the year 2021, a document called Medical Product Alert. Small, written very small. They produced five versions. And they say the PCR can not be used without giving the amplification cycle very clearly.
Right.
Nobody did that. And everything was wrong.
Right.
But I would say another thing that was very important, I did some research. I did an article, Acta Biomedica, for doctors who asked me to clarify with international health regulation. And I did something very simple in research. You compare SARS-CoV-1 and SARS-CoV-2.
Right.
SARS-CoV-1 took 8 months to touch 24 countries. So it's not like it went from Korea to Frankfurt in one day.
Right.
What it did is that I realized that the coronavirus is mutating so quickly, they never could develop or experiment a vaccine. It was failing each time, 30 years. So I said, no, that's not possible.
Right. To make a vaccine that's going to work for the entire world.
No, and that mutates. If it is a virus, and I have no evidence, because normally you have to put the corpus postulate and you have to see if it is chemical, if it's radionuclear, or if it's something else. Why focus on that or with all the
right.
You know? Yeah. So this I saw, but.
So you haven't seen, just to be clear, because this is a whole other conversation that comes a lot. You haven't seen evidence that this is necessarily even a virus. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. I have seen evidence that the postulate of Koch has not been applied systematically, and that this is mutating so quickly that at each border you have to re-establish if it is a virus, a bacteria, a parasite, a chemical agent, you know, like a toxicity, any toxicity actually, or it is radionuclear, or it is one of those bioweapons that we have listed.
Mm-hmm.
And this was in the international health relation course. First, you do a detective work, and the communication, we did some tabletop simulation of a press conference, and the ethical communication was to say, we don't know, but we are searching.
Mm-hmm.
And we have this evidence, but we're not sure that this is going to be the same in your country. So check it again. You see, and listen to what people say, go to the ground, re-establish the postulate of core. What has not been done in the core postulate, you have to isolate and purify the virus and you have to take pictures.
Mm-hmm.
But as it mutates all the time, it should be always different.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the third and fourth is that you have to establish what we do in science. Evidence is you have to prove that the causality, this ape creates B.
In some ways, you're supposed to take that isolated element and see, does it infect cells, right?
Take mice, put it back and you look if it is changed, the same change. You take another one, you do the same.
Right.
You take this virus if it is there and do it. And the fourth is the transmission. Does this mice transmit to that? How long? In which condition? In temperature? In the desert? In the Antarctica?
Right.
It's not possible to do a standardization.
Should be every nation should be doing this on their own for their own environmental differences, and so none of this happened.
No, on the opposite, it's standardized, and we got locked down after a month, and then I said no, it's impossible.
Right.
It's impossible because the first one was 20. It was 8 months to reach 24 countries.
Yeah.
So how come SARS-CoV-2 is suddenly locking down in 1 month?
Right.
So, you know, there were so many incoherence.
And I remember one of the issues when we first spoke that you were saying is, why did none of the scientists and specialists that were all involved in studying SARS-CoV-1 not get called and invited into a room to weigh in on SARS-CoV-2? It was like they were banned from listening, not going to listen to them. And we were running on computer models, imperial models that have now, and by the way, some of this you and I were discussing, we now know how wrong those things were because time has passed. Right. So nothing was going as in, and you made it very clear then people can go back and watch that episode on all that was wrong that really just shocked you in the work that you'd done. Now we are, you know, in a year and a half, nearly, you know, beyond that, moving towards 2 years since that moment. What is your message now? If you've been watching this, where are you at now? What is your focus now? And what do we need to be thinking about?
Yeah, well, of course, you know, when you have a scene like that, you study, you look, you read papers, we all do this. And sometimes it becomes totally incoherent. So I try to make some sense of coherence in what are they doing through WHO and through the UN by the papers they're producing. And what I saw is that they are changing slowly the agenda of WHO. Mm-hmm. Even the meetings they do, like the General Assembly, which is each year in May, they have changed and made an extraordinary World Health Assembly in November 2021. And I thought, that's very strange. This is exceptional if there is a war.
Right.
You know? And
so a special meeting just for that conversation.
Normally they can wait. The executive board is in January and in May in Geneva, it's the assembly where all the member states ministers of health come.
Right.
And they discuss the agenda of the future, the strategic priorities. And suddenly they have this extraordinary. So some people alerted me and I started studying that and I said, oh, what are they doing? They're preparing treaty convention of a new type. And there was a paper there from a woman I have worked with, Ilona Kikbush, which is was a bit strange at the time already. And I thought, she's there again. She was on mega cities, health in all policies, you know, this type of, why are you talking about this? But so she did that with somebody else. And this paper was circulating for all member states and was rolling out how they were going to establish a new convention, a bit like the tobacco convention.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that suddenly I saw in it is that they wanted to take down the constitution of the national member state, our constitution,
mm-hmm.
and instead establish WHO constitution as the only one government. I take the shortcut.
Yeah, right.
And I was trying to say, how can they do that? And they were referring to some articles. So yes, I went to see and go and look, your auditors can go and look at the WHO constitution, but you have to look at the right one where there are footnotes because there's some they erase the footnotes. And Article 19 to 22, you have it all. How they can take a grab on the world and what they have already done since January 2020. They can, in the name of emergency, and that's why we're still in an emergency law.
Yeah.
They can change the definitions. They changed the pandemic definition. They changed the immunization is a vaccine definition.
Yeah.
They're changing who are health workers. They're changing what is the public health emergency of international concern in a regional one also. So that's one. The other one is the procedures. They can roll out the diagnostics and the products they want. They are the agency of validation. mm-hmm. One Health, One World. And then you have all the marketing, all the products they're going to roll out. What they did, the measures, they can decide there are five items. And that was very strange. The other thing that was very strange is that, and that will, people who will listen will understand why it's dangerous. In Article 19 and 20, if a lawyer sees that, he's going to jump. If two-thirds of the member states agree, everybody agrees.
Wow.
The majority of two-thirds of member states saying, yes, we agree with this treaty or convention, will make everybody submitted to that. We haven't seen this coming.
You know, it's what's weird, and I even thought about like putting ads out. Here in America, we have only ever thought of the WHO as this group that sort of oversees third world issues, right? Health in Africa, India, things like that. And it's always seemed like a good thing, great someone. You know, I would almost say in America, I practically interchange like UNICEF and the WHO is the same thing. Like there's just these groups, these nonprofits out there that are doing good work in the world. And then I realized in COVID, at what point did WHO think they're in charge of us, right? I mean, I started realizing that we have a third world medicine group that is now treating America and the UK and, you know, Sweden and Switzerland or whoever will go along with it as though we're like a third world nation. You can just rush in here, force vaccinate us as though we're, you know, not educated, have no, you know. And I realized in some ways, what have I been accepting happening to other nations? This is horrible. But who do you think you are? Right? We're the United States of America. How is this possible?
The irony is that not President Trump, but before, they rolled out a plan to take over the world through the UN institutions because they could not rule the world on their own. Because I was looking for Paul Wolfowitz. He replaced James Wolfensohn at the World Bank, and I had worked with him, and he didn't take care of health. But when Paul Wolfowitz came into the World Bank, he signed directly with Gavi. He signed with Gavi, World Bank, and WHO to create this IFFIM. I think I talked about it, mm-hmm. the International Finance Facility for Immunization. Rolling down the money from World Bank, our money,
yeah.
into Gavi, creating CEPI, yeah, the mm-hmm. Foundation for Epidemic and Innovation. And he could go on with his vaccines, and the IFFIM has vaccine bonds. Go to the website. I went the other day and it's like, is it still there? And yes, you can see you can be part of the vaccine bonds. And I'm like, are they playing roulette Russe with us, you know,
yeah.
roulette? This is one proof that something was going on at that time already with Paul Wolfowitz, who was the undersecretary of the Pentagon policy mm-hmm. and working a lot with defense. Why did he do this move? And this paper says yes, because they could not take over the world, and they were worried of the Russian and the Chinese, and they cannot dominate that world. So let's use the United Nations. So hop through the World Bank with Gavi, they take over and submit everybody else, becoming a world government. And if you analyze what the World Economic Forum did in the last 10, 20 years, they went to Asia, to mm-hmm. the World Economic Forum, Japan, Asia, a big forum.
Yeah.
So they did go to China. A guy like Maurice Strong, who was always in the UN, and he did he was part of the Rio climate change hoax.
Yeah.
Yeah, he went to China, and you know, everybody seemed to go there. So the United Nations started at that time, 2003-05, to start being in the hands of those warmongers, going through the United Nations and doing a submission act by papers and slowly. If you follow this very interesting Bill Gates,
yeah,
not a doctor, but he came to Switzerland in 2006, created a foundation. 2009, he signed this agreement who gives him total immunity with the Swiss government, gives him the status of a member state with
right.
immunity. And then he puts in his board, you can see, you have the papers I gave you about, in the people who were in the board, you see former UN heads of agency, yeah. like Mary Robinson, head of the Human Rights Commission. I bet you see also Tedros Ghebreyesus. Before he became director general, he was in the Gavi. So they're just using everybody in the UN system to turn over the world, and it seems to happen right now. Whoever those who direct the UN system beyond what we see are doing.
It's amazing because, you know, and I've said this before on this show, I grew up as what we would reference as a progressive liberal in America. My parents would talk about the UN like it was Star Trek, like this idea of it's the melting pot for the world and we're all going to be the breadbasket of the world. We're all going to work together. And it sounded like a really beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. And now I realize, especially in the United States of America, where I think we have a very special constitution, one that in some ways kept us through this COVID pandemic from being totally assaulted the way I've seen Canada and Australia and other, you know, more like socialized nations. Mm-hmm. We still have some protections here. But this idea, you know, that we would all work together, I think in some ways as a little kid, and I think even my parents thought, but America would be in charge. But this thing wipes away it all. It wipes away our constitution. They don't want to see any of those things. And what's amazing was the use of these sort of NGOs, right? These nonprofit organizations. Yeah. And in many ways, they're criminals. I mean, Bill Gates is a criminal. This is a guy that was busted for trying to run monopolies, you know, was looked at as, I think, a bad guy in America. And then he said, you know what? I think he just said, I'll do the same thing, only I'll call it nonprofit work. I'll go and say, no, I'm investing in humanity and the future of the world. Yeah. And it was genius, but now we are seeing the dangers of it. Like, it really seems scary. There was a video that came out of one of these meetings talking about how to use the WHO to track and, you know, the surveillance of people that are vaccinated. Let's take a look at this really quick, because I think it's a huge part of what we're talking about.
So let's have a digital health certificate acknowledged by WHO if you have been vaccinated or tested properly, then you can move around. So for the next pandemic, instead of stopping the movement of the people 100%, which clogged the economy globally, you know, you can still provide some movement of the people. Indonesia has achieved, G20 country has agreed to have this digital certificate using WHO standard, and we will submit into the next World Health Assembly in Geneva as the revision to international health regulation. So hopefully for the next pandemic, we can still see some movement of the people, some movement of the goods, and movement of the economy.
I mean, just what this guy is saying with a smile on his face is like, this is a beautiful thing. Obviously, it's a room full of people. But you were talking about some international body controlling the movement of people, right? Those that will be allowed to move and those that will not, based on our testing, our vaccine, which in this case wasn't properly tested, never achieved what it was promised to achieve. Now we're seeing all sorts of health complications around the world, rises in all-cause mortality. I mean, just really horrific things that for your average scientist, I mean, honestly, is sending off red flags. We have more scientists speaking out now against health departments and government agencies than any moment in the history of the world. I've never, and you and I, you're here because we were just at a speaking event, and I said, this is a room full of scientists that are all, you're all the top of your field. Like, literally saying, folks, wake up. Wake up to what's taking place here. Do you feel like as you're speaking out about this that people are listening? Are we getting it?
Yes, it's getting better, but they don't see the magnitude. I still have a feeling they don't see how far it is. It's they have to take over their sovereignty, and they have a hard time to think that a government lies.
Yeah.
But once someone lies in your family and lies, you know that he's going to lie on the up the road. So that's where I'm trying to show them that no, we have to create a new world. You cannot just stay stuck in with someone who lies to you. And what is going on, what is rolling up there is that WHO is taking the grab in the name of values, in the name of ethics, in the, I'm going to help you, I'm going to be nice with you, but we are forcing you to right. this vaccine, an experiment, a global scale when it should be clinical. So it's very shocking. But what they have to, and that's why I speak, is that all those values that you have and I have also, it's, well, we are a good world, we're going to help each other and it's nice. You can see in the documents, I invite you to see the documents of the amendments of the International Health Regulation by the USA, Health Department. It is, don't strike, that WHO shall consult the nation. No, WHO will offer its aid, and if you do not obey, you will be on the commission of complaint and we will force you, taking a shortcut. And you go,
that's what, like, America, that's what we're adding into the languaging.
Yes, they're changing and twisting the language since the beginning, but now we see it more
so
and more.
So there's less and less voluntary and more
coercive
dictation.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. If someone has, what they're doing now, and you can go and see the text from 14th of November, U.S. amendments, is that they're trying to do quicker time span between alert and response. So there's alert, and you have to do a preparation to alert, so you're going to do an intermediate alert, and then you're going to do grades of alert, mm-hmm. and each time you have action, trigger, response. So I see, again, they want to establish a permanent alert response fear, so people are afraid, and they will say, oh, I have to take a vaccine because they have put a standard. So they are changing the rhetoric in the name, we're going to help you in the name of equality. We have to do this with everybody has to have a certificate. Everybody has to obey, and we are taking care of you. It's really like in fairy tales, you know, Hansel and Gretel.
Yeah.
I'm going to take care, come and eat in my place. And it is this perversity that you see in the text. It's obvious. Any school could make an exercise on those texts, or somebody who wants to do a study work on the master. It's very, very interesting. It is take away the power of nationality, of sovereignty, mm-hmm. of nations, and impose WHO.
I mean, just that term, national, take away the nationality, which is, you know, this idea of being a nationalist, mm-hmm. they've done a really great job in the media. And you're saying WHO is behind the media. A nationalist is now a white supremacist, you know, sycophant. Like, they're the crazy people, they're the dangerous people that actually just believe we should have a national identity and care about it. Something that in America used to thrive here. It's really scary how many people like see that as a bad idea. I've even seen in terms, you know, there's now, you know, professors coming out with writings talking about we shouldn't call ourselves Americans because that somehow makes us better than everybody else. We should just call ourselves, you know, citizens of the United States, which is just all of this is all part of the same thing. Now, you had a really cool graph where you sort of lay out the pandemic, and I just want to take a look at this as you can sort of talk us through it.
For the sense of coherence, people have to understand that this is a plan. It's a strategic plan rolling out. We can find it in the text. Under WHO emergency law of the international regulation, we are still in emergency. We have to stop this. Now, 2020 and 2021 was really the creation of fear through a deadly virus. And it is invisible. It has not been studied.
Right.
They're creating Omicron. Five different variants at the same time now.
Right.
Five different vaccine experimental that have not been experimented. So be afraid is really the motto for the rest. It's not finished. But then the scientific lies and deception have been rolled out under this fear very easily.
Yeah.
In 2020, it was really to establish a test that would prove or to people and force the coercion again to take the test with 95% of false positive. And it's a tyranny of tests, and it is a terror of the media. You have to know that McKinsey is behind this, the firm McKinsey. So they are rolling out a plan that's very carved. So the fraud and evidence is there. I've already said the PCR, the positive call. But that was the basis to say, oh, we need an experimental vaccine.
Right.
And we forgot the experiment. And in 2021, it was the year where they really rolled out this experiment clinical trial.
Of humanity.
Yeah, it should have been 80 people.
Yeah.
And it's open air. And I tell my colleagues, but This has never happened. Why do you put 1 million people in a clinical trial? It's not a clinic, it's open air.
Right, right. And if something's going wrong, how do you stop it? I mean, if you have made an error, where does it go? So that was 2021.
2021, yeah. And also all the ethics, there is no validation still today, people don't realize.
Yep.
And there is no ethics because everything, conflict of interest, I don't pay the damage, no liability, no consent, forced consent, abuse of power, even giving back the results to the people, the patient.
Yeah.
Nothing of all the ethics research committee.
So from your perspective as a former member of the Research and Ethics Review Committee, none of this is ethical. This is not ethically how you treat citizens and patients and or doctors for that matter.
It would not even have ticked the first box because it is a company who is making a vaccine experimental, who is leading the research and who is not paying the secondary effects. So no independence. Just that would not have worked.
Right.
And they're not even saying what is in the vial.
Right.
So you cannot, it's like if you give an apple to someone and you say, I tell you my apple is really good, it's going to heal you, but I don't tell you what's in it.
Right.
And if you die, it's not my fault, it's the government, let me give you the apple.
Right.
It's poison apple, it's
yeah.
A fairy tale.
Right. All right, so then we go into 2022, so, let's take a look at this. Yep.
Okay, so.
So the phase two, okay. Total control, what does that mean?
So total control means that their plan, and I have evidence of this through the documents of WHO, is that they want to digitalize the world. Mm-hmm. There are many documents that say digitalization of the world,
yep,
in different ways. The tech is extremely important in this rollout of phase two of total control.
Yep.
It's the digital, biotech, AI, Internet of Things, Internet of Bodies that is on one side. And the other side of the document is the genome editing. And when I saw that document from WHO in July 2021, sorry, they were preparing 22.
I mean, let's talk about that for a second. For genome editing, what the heck does that have to do with WHO? Genome editing seems to me to be a specialty. I mean, an incredibly experimental, exciting idea for the future of health somewhere in some clinic where I probably will pay a fortune to go and take the risk of editing my genomes for whatever issue. Okay, we can imagine that we are decades away from something. We've been watching just any form of gene editing therapies isn't working. It's causing cancer like crazy. Yeah. Why would a WHO, which is sort of just the World Health Organization, we take it, we should be general things. Do you have food? Do you have clean running water? Is your sewage being separated from your drinking water? You know, and then, you know, do you have a doctor, facility, hospitals near you? That is what I thought this was about. Why in God's name is gene editing a part of any conversation inside of the WHO, right?
Yes, I absolutely agree with you. Genome editing is a no-go. The Convention of Bioethics of Oviedo says don't touch the genome. It's a inheritance of humanity.
Yeah.
So when I saw that, I was shocked, really. You know, the decoding of the genome in 2000 happened, and since then, the price of doing your genome passport has gone down. It's done very quickly. And that's where it says that they have not really disclosed everything about the genome. That's the first thing. They said that there was a junk genome and that this is terrible. And actually some people say, no, the junk genome is the most interesting. That's where our power, our antennas are spiritually connected. I say it so people can go and search.
Yeah.
Junk genome or hidden genome. That's the most interesting. But now the epigenome is how you express your genome, but you don't touch the library. It's going to code and it's going to express your health or your disease. So when I saw that, I thought, oh, that's very weird. Does that come with CRISPR? Yes.
Right, CRISPR.
Is something already by definition. You go in the genome, you take off a piece and you put something else. And where is the ethics of this? And already there, if you think about it, there was no ethic validation. And when you look at the research on gene therapy, all the people who've been changed their genome died in the next generation. It cannot survive and it should not be touched.
Yeah, when you look at all these things, and you know, and I'm gonna ask the same question, just sort of try and wrap this up, and there's a lot to unpack.
Yeah.
The they, You know, I'm trying to figure this out. And I asked this, I think it's the hardest question, but I'm asking it now of every specialist I bring in here. Who is they?
Yeah.
And what are they, in your mind right now, what are they trying to accomplish?
Yeah, you can, I look at it different levels.
Okay.
Yeah.
You can
look at the policy level, you look at the UN, you look at the World Economic Forum, and there are different layers of international organization, like big krakens, huge, and some are enhancers of the total grab on humans. Some are contributor policy. So who is at the top of that? Well, they are the puppets of something above. Because the Secretary General of the United Nations takes all the presidents of the world in September every year in New York,
mm-hmm.
and he obeys to the Security Council. Five states who have been the post-war big countries leading the world. So, you know, who obeys to who? So already, even on the UN, Secretary General and above Secretary General, they are, you know, there are a group of people who are trying to direct him.
Mm-hmm.
And then in WHO, there is Tedros and Gavi. For me, that's... But
yeah.
Above this, there is a public-private partnership. It's probably private. And the, what I see there is that the governments of the world are not governments anymore. They are CEOs of a huger group.
Yeah.
Not so huge.
Well, it's not. I mean, like, for instance, we're just, you know, when we look at Jeremy Farrar, Wellcome Trust, his name, we're watching in all of these, you know, conversations about who's funding mm-hmm. legal or illegal gain of function, you know, and these people aren't being arrested. They're not being, even while we are having hearings in Washington over ethics, did someone break a law here? They're very people that should be being called in or rising to places of power inside of WHO, UN, as though, and they all, what is so scary now is even how we're pushing a vaccine that's a total failure, doesn't stop transmission, doesn't stop infection, is showing high rates of myocarditis, pericarditis. We have athletes dropping literally on television screens right before our eyes, and yet leaders, President of the United States says on New Year's Eve, what you need to do is go out and get vaccinated. I mean, why is there no fear in what they're doing? I mean, it seems to be a disaster to anybody still thinking, yet there is an agenda going on here.
Mm-hmm.
These players are, what do we do? What are we going to do? I mean, you're obviously here, you're speaking out because you believe in humanity, right? What do we need to do?
It's a big question, but first, someone the depopulation agenda. And this, you know, that Gavi, Bill Gates has had actually
stated publicly wants to reduce populations,
and that is very scary for me because it means they want to go to children and babies. They are trying to make sterile men and women, and they want to exterminate the original human genome because they know that this is very powerful. We are powerful. We are scaring them. I'm reversing it a bit.
Yes.
We're scaring them.
I agree.
And we have an incredible power. Maybe it's their last battle, probably.
Uh-huh.
So that's also spiritual. And we have to make sure that we are anchored in our own DNA and genome, spirit up and down, you know, from the...
You know, right there, what I find interesting is how many scientists are talking about the spiritual life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it seems like... Even I, as a journalist, avoided it in many conversations. It just isn't how we talk about science, and it's not appropriate. But so many people are starting to feel that this is good and evil.
Yes.
Is that what you think is
you know,
going
I cannot,
on here?
I cannot say something, anything. It's so evil that I even question if they're human. Because how can you, you know, all this pedocriminality I don't want to talk about, but there is a lot behind this that is unacceptable ethically, morally. And I have seen through my work that there were people that were horrible, but you avoid them and you're diplomatic. Because, yeah. But I like a sentence from General Romeo Dallaire, who was the peacekeeper in Rwanda during the genocide. And he was Canadian and he was there posted and he rang Kofi Annan and he said, you know, they send me troops, they're going to make a genocide. And he got a PTSD because he got genocide in front of his eyes. He couldn't do anything. Nobody helped him. So it's not the first time. He said, I have shaken the hand of the devil. I have smelled it. I have seen it. And that's why I believe in God. And I think it resumes very well what's going on, because it has forced us to say, this is so evil. What resort is best for us? Where do you take your strength? Well, it's knowing that you have not made yourself, and there's a higher force, and there's a universe, and you need to be connected. You know, we are not alone, but we have to connect to our source. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, we are electromagnetic. We're not just flesh. So when you try and explain it, we're not just flesh. We have a heart. It's electromagnetic, mm-hmm. heart-brain coherence. The brain is electroencephalogram. And when you love, the frequency of love has been measured. Love is a very high frequency, even in the colors. And hate and fear are very low in energy and frequency. This is where we're going with the next medicine, you know, and frequency health.
Yeah.
And this is what I like. You know, even churches, I'm finding out a lot of things that I'm going to use in science in the future, is that even orgs, you know, the pipes in the churches.
Okay, yeah, pipe organ. Yeah.
Even the pipe organ were there to heal. And it makes sense, because the pipe organs have a frequency of equilibrium. So colors and all this art, which was art before, I think is coming back to the scene.
I agree. I keep saying that I think that what we're going through is the last, you know, white knuckle grasp of the Neanderthals of medicine and control, trying to hold on to their relevance. I do think we're powerful beings. I think they are terrified of us. They're even more terrified after the lack of success they've had through COVID. We focus on those that got the vaccine, and many of them are watching the show now and aren't getting any more. And we all find our entry place into realizing what's happening here. But 30% of America, and I think a good part of the world, even though the numbers are probably messed with, really stood their ground and said, no way. And we are seeing a rise now. I mean, here in America, they can't give away the new booster shots. I mean, nobody's taking them. Okay. And so we're seeing a real shift. When you look at 2023, we first spoke in 2021, a lot happened over the last, you know, almost 2 years now. How are you looking at 2023? What do we need to be looking out for? What do you think we need to be doing specifically in this year? It seems to be very important in the future of our species.
Yeah, well, on the political level, we need to say no, but we need to cut the finance of all those people, because the finance is keeping on that. I would love a finance expert to do the flow of where our taxes are going. Uh-huh. It's very disturbing to think that our taxes are paying for this campaign, propaganda for experimental vaccine. But at the human level, we have to reinforce our power. We have to get together, like in the meeting we had in Orlando, which was beautiful. Mm-hmm. Would the injured, vaccinated be together?
Yeah.
Work together, fight. There are solutions.
Yeah.
There are absolutely solutions that are not talked about. I'll give you my protocol. And we have to also create this new way of living. Stop always going for the best, the money. You know, I'm telling people, just live simply. You can be happy. It's not the Atali thing. You know, we have a French guy who says, you'll be happy and own nothing.
Right.
No, nothing.
Right.
You will own yourself.
Right.
And you will be happy with simple things. You don't need to do what the media says and what the marketing says, because they try to own us also with this marketing. Come back to really simple, the best, you know, make your food yourself.
Yeah.
That's a way to save yourself.
Yeah.
And reconsider life very differently, because we've been programmed through a lot of things. So it's our chance. We have to be positive. It's an incredible chance. Humans were there since the beginning, since a long, long time. So we're here and on Earth at this time. And in fact, it's almost a celebration, even if the battle is still going to happen this year.
Yeah.
They're going to try their best to do another lockdown. I can see that in Europe. environmental lockdown, you know, try with money. So we should really be in communities that are very solid, has solidarity, get out of the city.
Yeah.
Get out of the city because I didn't mention this, but one of the agenda is smart cities.
Yes.
You know that because smart cities, you have Internet of Things. We know exactly
they're
where
prisons.
You are.
I mean, yeah. they're basically like it's like going to be escape from New York. I mean, literally, you will be imprisoned in these spaces. They're watching everything we're doing. Even here in Austin, I think Austin's a big city looking at that. Boulder, Colorado, where I came from, I think they're looking at these very evolved liberal cities will be the first giant prisons.
As far as I find, counter solution, definitely, but creativity. But we have to have a plan B and C and trust. We're protected. I have no doubt. Otherwise, we wouldn't be speaking.
Yeah.
So.
Well, those are all really great points. I want to thank you for the work you're doing. You're on that list of really brave doctors and scientists and authorities that are telling us what's happening behind the scenes. I hope you'll keep us informed and posted on everything and all the work that you're doing. And I just want to thank you for taking the time to join us.
Thank you, Del.
Thank you, Astrid.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.